Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Rachel Shackleton.
All right.
And Joe Skill.
All right.
Hey, we're all doing well. So, I just thought we'd have a bit old natter about Cyberpunk 2077. I'm going to open this with an overall sort of conversation about where the hype is at and where we're all at on Cyberpunk. And then there's an article that's come out quite recently doing the rounds on the old N4G news website by Game Pressure, where they've sort of broken down the reality of playing Cyberpunk and saying whether it lives up to the sort of hyped up version that we have. So let's just sort of open up by saying, where are we on Cyberpunk? Are we riding the hype train right now?
It's impossible not to be caught up with excitement for this game, because I feel like it's ticking so many boxes for so many people, and the fact that it's got such an incredible lineage of developer behind it, it's, you know, and it's got Keanu Reeves. I mean, come on.
We didn't even need it to have anything additional. Then Keanu Reeves just strutted out on a cloud of smoke and he's brilliant.
Yeah. So use the expression of when people win E3. It definitely was one of the moments that had us.
Especially I leapt off my couch.
When we were watching it live, didn't we?
We did watch it live.
Yeah, yeah. Did the reaction for it and it was just unbelievable. It was a double take moment of like, is that actually Keanu? Oh my God, it's actually Keanu Reeves.
And Keanu himself has said that it was really hard to keep it as a secret, because he's obviously in John Wick. He's kind of used to the embargo-y stuff, but he was like, oh my God, I'm in the new Cyberpunk. And then eventually now we can talk about it. But yeah, it's not like they even needed any more big gets, but now they have that. Rach, what do you think overall?
Oh, I'm very hyped. Like Jill's mentioned there, it's ticking a lot of boxes for me. It's well and truly ticking my tickle. I don't know where I'm going.
Ticking all your boxes, mate.
It's tickling everything. No, I'm like so up for it. I've been looking for like just a massive RPG for a while now that I can just like dive into and just become one with the RPG. And I'm like, I really think that Cyberpunk is going to be that. Saying that, though, I am very, very wary of overhype, because overhype kills a lot of things for me. I was excited for Red Dead 2, bought it, and I haven't played it, just
really?
For example. Well, Mike's been playing it, but like I'm just like not interested. I don't... Overhype.
Is the journey more interesting than the destination sometimes in gaming?
Maybe. I get a lot of second-hand hype. I used to get this, obviously, working in a game store where, like, obviously, we had to be hyped. We had to sell the game. I would get really caught up in it, like Fallout 4, for example, a game series that I'd never played before. And everyone was so excited. We did the midnight launch. Everyone was all dressed up. It was really cool. And then I thought, oh, heck yes, like, I'm buying this game, even though I knew I wouldn't like it. And I didn't like it. I don't know why, but, like, yeah, hype is a weird thing. It's crowd mentality. And like, I think maybe ever since then, I tend to go against.
It's better to have more relaxed expectations.
The crowd. Like, totally. Yeah.
See, I'd say that my expectations for this game in particular are counted against the losses that other competitors have made in the time being. I'm going to use Anthem. We love talking about Anthem recently, and also to some extent Fallout 76, because of the fact that those were futuristic, sort of nigh on apocalyptic versions of video games that offered branching this and storyline that,
and they didn't
manage to deliver. Whereas then CD Projekt Red came along and was just kind of like, listen, you know what we're like. You may have heard of our little title called The Witcher. I know it's a TV show that's coming for them. You know what I mean? Like jokingly, and it delivered on so many fronts that I have a brand loyalty and a trust that is implicit with CD Projekt Red.
I think that's the thing. Like with The Witcher 3, like it's weird when you, because I also have that too. Like I adore The Witcher 3. It's one of my favorite games like of all time and of the generation. But when you think back on, I mean, I like The Witcher 2, but you think about where those games were before The Witcher 3, they very much weren't on the radar anywhere near as much as they are now. And so it's like everyone kind of fell in love with CDPR because of what they offered that year. And it's like, how much is that then coasting by into Cyberpunk.
I was worried, like, that was something that crossed my mind the other day. I played Witcher 2.
Right.
And I didn't actually really like it that much, just because the combat felt very floaty. I didn't like the idea of having to mix all the potions before battle and stuff like that. I found that it felt really alienating because I, A, hadn't read the books and B, hadn't played the first game. And I know you shouldn't jump into a second game without...
I guarantee 99% of people jumped into The Witcher 3.
But then, but then that's what The Witcher 3 did for me. It felt like it was a friendly but also very deep story. And I didn't have to know everything to get the most out of it because the gameplay was so good. And I feel like that's what they nailed. So I'm just hoping that if they can transfer that over to Cyberpunk, they're on for a winner.
But how weird is that? That like they went from two games where they were very much on a particular trajectory where they finally nailed third-person action in The Witcher 3. And then they went, actually, we're not doing that again. We're going to do a first-person...
Quit while you're ahead.
Kind of. Yeah. Then all those lessons learned, they can't really port them across. As I'll get to in the gameplay stuff, like there are some specific things carrying across. Yeah. But for me, the thing that worried me when they announced it was first person was that, because I was like, oh, it's going to be Cyberpunk's going to play like The Witcher 3, but it's going to be in a Cyberpunk city.
I'm actually really glad. I did love my short stint on The Witcher 3. We were talking about this earlier. I will go back and play it. I will.
Yeah. You won't. You'll play Dark Souls.
5 or 6 hours or something. Maybe I will just play Dark Souls 1. Who knows? But I did enjoy it. Like, Geralt, I fancy the pants off. He's gorgeous. But I think there is just something amazing about having a first-person RPG where you are the character. Yeah. And that's, I think they wanted to try that. Mm-hmm. I think that is, in my opinion, that was a logical thing for them to try.
Oh, yeah, they've totally said, like, it makes you more immersive. And they said, like, with the city being so vertical, like, they can nail that better in first-person.
And there's character customization as well.
Yeah, so. Well, you won't see much.
Yeah, that's something that I would say is potentially a bit of a negative, is that the first-person mode does affect the customization, but then again, in Dark Souls, is another good example. You customize the hell out of it, but you never see your person, really.
Because you're like a beef jerky most of the time. But like in something like, for example, Skyrim, 2 hours on the character creator, and then you play it in first person.
Yeah, at least in those, you can toggle it, though.
Yes, that's true. At least you can toggle it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, something like in Cyberpunk, they showed, like, at E3, they showed the guy riding the bike.
Yes.
So it's like, you can see your character if you really want to, but it's not as, like, easy kind of thing.
I mean, this is the thing. What Cyberpunk offers us as gamers is something that is really, really interesting, because it's, you know, the futuristic cities, you've got your Deus Ex, sort of like, is robotics and androids and cyborgs, are they removing humanity? I'm sure that's going to be a story.
Oh, transhumanism is a massive thing.
Then we've got then you've got the wasteland of like depleting resources and crime laws that are coming up. So you've got your Blade Runner references, you've got like tons and tons of things. It captures this brilliant bit of sci-fi that not many games have really tried to explore. There are tons of sci-fi games out there, but they fall much more under the sort of space opera style thing, like your Knights of the Old Republic or your Mass Effects. They definitely fall into that. This is not clean. This is a dirty, like scummy field.
Super like gritty. Like, look what this entire gang have done, where they've like modded their entire cranium so they have cameras in their heads instead of eyes. Like, I love that sort of stuff. And that's what drew me to the book in the first place. I guess speaking of CD Projekt Red, though, like in terms of how they've handled the hype and stuff, they made a big point of saying, like, we're not going to show it off until it's definitely ready. Mm-hmm. Because one of the biggest problems with The Witcher 3 in terms of its perception was the downgrade, quote unquote, which like they then came out and said, well, look, it's not a downgrade in as much as, you know, they obviously the aesthetics did change, but they said as we got through development and we optimized the project, these were the best graphics we could possibly do based on the size the game became. Therefore, it's an optimization, it's not a downgrade.
Yeah, The Witcher is like 90 gigabytes or something, isn't it?
It's still huge, and it's like, and it still looks gorgeous, but obviously, if you go back to the original debut, it doesn't look like it used to.
Yeah.
So I see what they meant, but obviously, they had to sort of navigate that. So going forward with Cyberpunk, they were like, we're not going to show anything until it's absolutely completely how it's going to be when you buy it. But then they showed people behind closed doors at E3, I think it was last year. Maybe the year before, and a whole bunch of game journos got to see it. We didn't see it, but whatever. But then, that then exploded. So they were like, "Oh God, we're sorry." Like, obviously, it's out there. People are telling the public about it. So then they put out that Twitch stream.
They knew. They knew what they were doing. It was an orchestrated thing. You don't invite the press to go and have a look at your game unless you don't want it to leak.
I wonder, because like that's what I was going to say. Is do we think they've handled it intelligently so far? It's not even out until next year. But like the way that the hype is sort of ballooning. Usually with hype, it balloons so much and then it pops. Do you think that? Hopefully they're...
What is it? It's April, it's out, isn't it?
Yeah. So, it's still a while away. We have a lot of more... We have way more preview things to put out
there. I think the thing is, what I was saying earlier about overhype, that tends to happen if you have it announced... If you have too much out about it too soon, if you get me.
Yeah.
Because we've got so long to wait, people will either forget about it or expect to see more and more until like we've seen so much of the game that it's like, oh, well, I guess it's out soon.
Because I'm hoping they do... Like, they put lots of messages in their trailers saying, like, you know, like, this is very much the alpha stage or whatever stage they're at, it's nothing final. And they've said, like, oh, the real gameplay is coming later this year. So like that was what Marcin Nowinski was saying at E3.
But then you should always worry then, because if you're saying that this is alpha gameplay, then you should never take that as the finished result. They always state that this is not indicative of the final mm-hmm. product. And how many games have we heard of? We've heard tales of like games in their like 90th minute, like turning around and changing it. Like Borderlands is a perfect example of that. That used to have an art style that was brown and not cell shaded. And then one day they were like, oh, yeah, now let's just re-scrap the entire project and do that. Who's to say that CD Projekt Red won't do the same sort of thing and be like, ah, we showed the journalists what we wanted to show them. Maybe we're going to change it completely.
Well, that's pretty much the angle of the Game Pressure piece, which I'll get to in a sec. But I think in terms of that, like that's why I kind of think of that Twitch thing that they put out was very much them doing damage control. Because, I mean, obviously we didn't go to E3. So it's like when you're reading like secondhand, third-hand reports of a game that you really love, at some point you do just want to see it. Like you can only read so many pieces telling you that it's like the next greatest thing or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I'm going down the honesty route. Hopefully they did just go, oh God, we'll give them something.
Yeah.
And they just showed the stream.
They showed 45 minutes of gameplay. Am I the only one that thought that was like super duper surprising?
It's a bit, well, almost like overconfidence at that point, isn't it?
I wouldn't say it was confident. I view it arrogance? As the opposite. I view it as them breaking under the pressure and being like, well, we want to give you something.
No, but 45 minutes is it goes beyond that. If it was a 10-minute vertical slice demo, then I would have been like, oh, you know, that's possibly damage control and it's basically just showing us that. Mm-hmm. 45 minutes, that's a lot of time to go wrong. Think about how many presentations we've seen where something has gone wrong within a 5-minute
window. I think
it
was a video. They weren't actually playing it.
Totally. But it was, as a chunk of the game that they showed, it was apparently what they did show behind closed doors initially.
Yeah.
Or at the Gamescom the previous year or whatever. It was meant to be enough to satiate the hungry fans that were saying like, oh my God, you keep talking about this being a playable thing, but we're never seeing it, but you're showing these other people.
Well, it worked.
Yes, for the most part, it kind of worked. But that's the thing, like you sort of take all those things together and it's like, do we actually know what Cyberpunk is right now? Or do we have this like fed version of it? Because that seems to be the back and forth. Like I think based on what's out there, I have a pretty good idea of what it is. Like, do you guys think
what do you want it to be?
Well, that's the thing. I kind of want it to, the nearest comparison it gets is Deus Ex in an open world, which I do want. The thing that threw me completely for a loop was the lack of third-person combat.
Yeah.
So for me, what I want it to be is just the most sprawling open world RPG possible. I don't need combat focus necessarily.
I don't want that.
What do you want?
I want large levels, not open worlds.
That's not what it is.
I know that's not what it is, but I'm just saying that's what I want from my Cyberpunk. I want them to at least build it in a way that makes every area of their game world feel relevant, because so many places have done this open world thing and they've just made them big without anything to do. Mm-hmm. And that worries me slightly, because it's a case of how do you have these really memorable things, like you talking about the people who have the cameras in their eyes and stuff like that. Like, how do you have that carried across 90 hours? You need to have memorable moments everywhere.
Well, I think the way that they seem to have designed the open world is like, it's called Night City and you have, I think it's 5 different boroughs. Mm. And it's like, assumedly different gangs will only live in those different boroughs. So like, whether you like, you know, seed those different gangs with different events that only happen every few in-game days or something, I guess that's how you'd make it work.
Do you think they're going to do like Radiant questing style thing, like from like Skyrim and stuff like that, to make it feel like there's a lived-in atmosphere?
I would assume so. I mean, that's actually, we might as well segue into the article as well, because that's what this is. This guy working for Game Pressure did this whole big write-up about like, I finally got to play Cyberpunk. Uh-huh. Here's the reality of what it's like playing Cyberpunk. And one of the things to address is the crime stuff, or is the way that the NPCs work and everything, because one of the earliest reports for the game was that, oh, it just feels like you're living in this world. There's so many animations, it just feels like you're looking down a bustling city street. And he was saying that, like, while that is mostly true, he got a feeling that they were already starting to repeat, that there was, like, it was one of the criticisms levied at Red Dead 2.
How long was he playing?
It doesn't say. So I'm assuming, a good chunk of time.
Yeah.
But that was the thing, one of the things that came out against Red Dead 2 was that like it can feel like a stage performance. Like the first time you roll into Rhodes at the start of Red Dead 2, all of us would get the exact same animation as what's happening in that town at that time. And I can forgive that in terms of, you know, there's this nice industrious town and they're building this house as you walk through.
Yeah.
But then, I don't know, why do you guys draw the line on that?
Well, for me, Spider-Man is my port of call for that one. I was quite late to the game playing Spider-Man and I absolutely bloody loved it.
Oh, yeah.
But I got to about, maybe, let's say, 80% through the main story and I'd done all of the side quests. Mm. So all I had to do was finish that. And then I bought the DLC.
Ooh.
And when I bought the DLC afterwards, I was like, ooh, I'm now suddenly aware of how repetitious some of the side missions are. I'm suddenly aware of how everything starts to feel very samey. And as I was doing that, I was getting diminishing returns the more I was playing through for the DLC.
I felt that in the main story.
Because it was just the core story repeated. Mm-hmm. And I hope that doesn't affect Cyberpunk, because the only way you can stop that from happening is to unfortunately put tons and tons of extra bits in and raiding questing and like changing all the bits and bobs. Mm-hmm. And well, that takes so much time and effort.
I honestly think that is what they are concentrating on. It seems like they have gameplay, they have visuals, they have everything pretty much set in now. I think what they are doing now over the next year is going to be these little things that they know people are going to be looking for.
I was going to say, let's talk about like animation stuff, because like how much animation variety do you expect to see in an open world game? Or can they get like something like Skyrim? It's not like there's a focus on lots of individual animations, but I remember when Watch Dogs 2 got shown off, there were a couple of NPCs playing basketball together and one of them was doing like hacky sack or something. And I was like, oh, that's like a, you know, I've not seen that much NPC animation
before. But you know how Skyrim got around that? Mm. They didn't have to animate tons and tons of like special things going on, like, I don't know, man playing with his dog or whatever. They just had to have the dialogue and the little conversations you pick up. That's what makes the thing feel unique. Like, I can walk to Whiterun and back and not have the same experience because I will encounter things on my way there, and the people will be doing different things at different times
of
day.
I'm totally fine with that, that's
what they'd have to do to make Cyberpunk feel like also, it was constantly.
Where'd you come down that initially, Rachel, before I go a bit further in terms of like NPC animations and stuff?
For me, that is what makes a world feel lived in, is unique sort of interactions and stuff like that. And animations, you mean just like seeing people idle and just doing
how much do you like lose the immersion if you see them repeating something? Like, because witches, little towns will repeat animations and dialogue if you keep riding through them.
I feel like I'm never really truly like 100% immersed in a game. So like if I see that, I'm not, like, nothing really bothers me. I'll just be like, oh well, it's a game, you know, these guys are human that made this. Like,
I kind of have that where I'm like, you know, you can't expect an infinite amount of stuff.
It's interesting and like it depends on what game you're playing, doesn't
maybe.
It because if you're playing Watch Dogs 2, for example, and it tells you that this is a living city, you expect a living city because that's what they hyped it up as. But if we're playing, say, Ocarina of Time or Majora's Mask, we know that they're going to be sat there at the store. Yeah, they're not going to be doing anything.
That lass is going to be chasing that dog all day.
But that's fine because you accept it because it was never made into a thing. But then it's like, what it is.
How much is that a case of the times and like obviously retrospect versus what? Like, and it's not necessarily CDPR saying this is the next level of city tech. Oh, that is the way it's been written.
I mean, that's sort of what I'm expecting. I am personally expecting the biggest, most impressive RPG we've seen ever. And maybe that's the hype again, isn't it? This is why I'm trying not to have too lofty expectations because I just know I'll be let down, but then I'll be too like probably rose-eyed glasses to be let down. But no, like I am expecting that, and that's what we get.
Yeah, one of the things that the guy pointed out about the NPCs, he said walking through the city has no interaction with the NPCs. He said if you move into people, you just shuffle them out the way and they move V as if they're a cube of physics, walking further in their own direction. So like that's another thing. For me, that doesn't bother me because that's what you do in Elder Scrolls. I don't need CDPR to put like infinite budget into NPC animation.
I'm not
interested
in random NPCs. Mm. Like, I mean, there was a cool thing in Spider-Man, obviously, you could like finger gun people and they go, oh, it's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like, and that was quite cool. That felt kind of lived in. But then there's like Red Dead, for example, where if you look at someone the wrong way, they start kicking off with you.
Which makes more sense in that context.
But that actually got annoying because it was like, oh, just let me be.
Right.
Well, from what I've seen. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Maybe a happy medium. I mean, like certain quest.
That thing that you said though about Zelda, it's like you have that bit of you where you're like, you're aware that it's a game, you're aware that it's coding and scripting and AI routines and everything else. And like, I don't know if that's just the way that we sometimes play it, where like if something goes askew, like, you know, something goes wrong and something repeats, I don't take it as a negative unless it does it all the time.
You're just like, well, it's a game.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone made this game. And
yeah, and I wonder how much they're like, I mean, I don't think CDPR, like I said, are putting that message out, but how much do you think the hype has become, this is the next level, this is a living city?
An easy way to put it into perspective is just to go like, okay, if we were playing our game and I was the NPC and you walked up to me and you pressed the button, it was like, hey, hi, hey, hey, what up, hey, hi, hey, like that gets annoying after a while. Funny,
it doesn't. I think I'd probably go for quite a good time, but half an hour,
let's not test that. But I do feel like if you're going to try and make this sort of like say narratively focused world, then maybe you should have some hustle and bustle that's actually happening. Like,
tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra.
and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And I actually watched, or I know, I read an article that was on the making of Skyrim, because I was genuinely so impressed with how much Bethesda and their company have put into that game. And I know a lot of people give them a lot of flack for recent choices with Fallout and stuff like that, but still.
Skyrim was 8 years ago.
It was an epic undertaking to get that amount of people to get together and do all of it. So I was just blown away with how much sort of scripting and choices that they had to do. I'm not saying that CD Projekt Red has to do that.
Well, that would be my thing.
It'd be nice.
My thing would be that I'm more than fine with another open world like that. I think that one of the things with the hype is that it is, a lot of people have said coming out of that initially behind closed doors demo, this is the next open world RPG, the next step up or whatever. And that guy who's writing this thing up on Game Pressure very much says that visually, yes, you see a whole bunch of different animations and everything, but the way that it was handled in The Witcher was repetitive. And when he started walking through crowds, they sort of just bump out the way kind of thing. So it is very much
alpha.
Yeah, for now, totally. They have another year, but it's like full on crowd interaction and crowd animations is a pretty hefty thing to put in the last year. Especially when I think they've already said that at this stage they're very much in the final stretch to perfect everything.
Yeah, you would assume.
If it was something more in depth, would have been implemented by.
But I tell you what, there is a game out there that has managed to make crowds feel at once both realistic and also they don't interact with you at all, and that's the Hitman franchise.
Shovel Knight?
Was it? Not Shovel Knight at all. Stop.
Have you been to the village in Shovel Knight?
I'm just saying Hitman.
You can talk to anyone.
Hitman's crowds are probably the best crowds in gaming for me personally, because of the fact that you've got tons and tons of people who are just milling about doing their day-to-day, and you can just sit there and watch them, but they have no impact.
You can also steal any of their clothes. They manage to make all one big gameplay element.
So I guess what you need to do to make a crowd an interesting but not essential thing is to just make them interactable. But only on a base level. But I'm not talking about just having to talk to them. Just make sure that you can kill them and rob them.
So this is a good nexus, because the dude mentions at the beginning of this that one of the biggest examples to compare it to was GTA 5, which I openly just completely disagree with. But whatever. He was just saying, it's an open world open world game with vehicles. Therefore, he states the question must be asked, comparing it to GTA 5. And when he's talking about NPCs, he says you can't commit any random crimes and you can't just go on a killing spree killing everybody, which I was never going to do
because
that anyway.
That would heck up the story. So why are they going to let you do that?
But you brought that up by yourself. So what makes you want to do that? Why?
I think that the main point of role playing.
Jules.
No. I think that the main point of role playing any game is that you should be able to experience any sort of
choice.
Yeah, it comes down to that. And if the game is telling me that my choices affect my game, then you shouldn't be you can't do that, bud. But you can make a choice about what color Tic Tacs you want out of this. To me is not saying. If I want to play some heavily augmented person who's lost his personality, effectively Dr. Manhattan, but a self-made one, and he's losing in control, and he's walking through the streets, and some guy eyeballs him, and he's a bit self-conscious about having this sort of metal plate and a gold tit or something like that, and he looks at him and he goes, I'm going to beat you up.
Error.
It's very much in rhythm that I'm going to beat you up.
He's had a voice box installed from the latest Guitar Hero games. Yeah, he's a transformer who turns into a boombox. Right, he built my character, right?
He's the Brock Lesnar with the boombox meme.
Exactly. Good. And he's got two big speakers for chest plates. Yep. And then he walks up and he batters somebody. That's what he wants to do.
Well, he's not going
to
do that in this game. Then you can totally do the first half of that conversation. You can get completely augmented. You can become a big walking fridge with a face.
But you can't.
According to this dude, you can't go running off doing crimes.
All I'll say is action is better than intent sometimes.
This is a bigger, wider philosophical
sometimes
quandary for a different sometimes time. Intent is all that matters. But I will say that in that regard, why do we always jump to crime and violence being the way to interact with an open
world? Because gaming, at the end of the day, is escapism, and we can't do that stuff in real life. So we got to go to games to do it. I can't just go up to an old lady and hit her.
You totally could, but don't do it though.
But it does come down to sort of like there are no rules. If you're going in there and you're building a character, you should be able to build them to whoever you want. And sometimes it's fun to be a Machiavellian evil person.
Yes.
There's no other way in life that you can experience it without heavy consequences.
Do you not think that because we've done that in so many games, do we need to do that in a cyberpunk world? Is it going to lose something, basically, if you don't have those elements?
If you are
not for me, but...
Same.
If that's the case, then it should be stated from the off that your guy or girl or whatever person you're making is... this character, they have a name, they have a backstory because clearly they're a character.
Yeah. Or the augments are locked by the state and they can't be used until you're in specific zones or something.
Now that would actually make a lot of sense. If there was just like a no murder policy and you've upgraded yourself to be like, I literally can't do that, then you know what? I'd buy that because now that's a narrative reason why I can't do it. But if it's left open-ended and my guy just goes, I don't fancy killing that guy even though he's just insulting me because the game says I think
you can do something, because thinking back on the footage and knowing Cyberpunk, it's just we're recording this at 4:30 in the afternoon. There's a thing called Trauma Team, which is the sort of state mandated militaristic hospital crew that pop in and literally eliminate the threat that was causing a disturbance and then ferry you out to revive you later. It's just meant to be this sort of comment on health for only the wealthy can afford it.
Yeah.
And it's like they don't care about the commoners, so they just come in, gun everybody down. Oh, but you're the victim, right? Let's save you.
That's what
Trauma Team is.
You would like
and,
that.
No,
it's a good idea.
Don't like it as a practice. I like it as an idea.
It's a good idea. Yeah. And the Trauma Team are in the game, and they show them in the first trailer. They're the ones that come out of the helicopter or the ship or whatever near the end of the first demo. So they are in there. So it's like this thing, this write up seems to just talk about you can't just go on like wayward killing sprees. They do mention that although there's not a wanted system, there is a search system, but you can't surrender or be arrested. So it seems like crimes are potentially doable, but not in a sense that it becomes the game, like in GTA. It's not a signifiable element.
So you could do something wrong, but you don't then have the option to pay your fine or what is it? Pay your fine or
pay your dues.
Stand your ground. You must respect the law. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah.
Trying to find that balance, though. It's like, trying to cater to the player that wants to like poke and prod and see what they can get away with.
I think I need to revise my answer as to why I would want to play Cyberpunk as a bad person.
Right.
I feel, because of watching Blade Runner and a lot of dystopian sci-fi films, that you start to understand that those films have a clear message of the value of human life is worthless at that point, because they've either augmented them beyond their reasoning, or it's just become such a sprawl with such a fight for resources that the strongest survive.
Capitalism's taken over.
And that's why I'd want to build a person that would thrive in that cutthroat world.
That's great.
And sometimes you'd have to be ruthless.
I would want to do the complete opposite.
Also, remember the bloody live action trailer that starts with a heist gone wrong.
Yeah. That's the thing. If you talk about archetypal cyberpunk fiction or Blade Runner 2049, the original cyberpunk, that idea of augmenting yourself that you don't even have your humanity. In the original text game, you have a humanity stat that you're losing as you augment yourself and everything. So I like that.
I'm so boring. I always play RPGs as a good guy.
You're going to play as a regular
human. Oh, you've kind of convinced me. I kind of want to be an asshole.
Do you not want a camera for your face? Do you not want a big old lens?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
An evil camera.
With some arm spikes.
As a side note, would you guys, if it was an option, cybernetically enhance yourself?
Yes. I love transhumanism. Yeah, I think it's fantastic.
Mate, can I have jetpack boots?
You can have jetpack boots. Yeah.
While we're on, I totally recommend looking into Ray Kurzweil.
Is it real?
Transhumanism is the idea of getting augments and chips in your body and stuff. Dude called Ray Kurzweil. I think he's the dude. If you look at Ray Kurzweil, you'll eventually find the guy that put a chip in his arm and he stayed in. He was either in America or the UK, and they hooked up a web feed to a cybernetic arm that was in the other country, and he moved the arm from the other country. Yeah.
Don't like
that. I love that. Why
every
don't you
day
like that?
We stray further from God.
There's also an amazing
amazing, we have to become gods.
There's an amazing cosplay person as well, and I can't remember his name, but he's in the Guinness World Book of Records because he's the first person to have a fully functioning cybernetic arm that is literally the same one that's from Deus Ex Human Revolution.
Is that not the Konami one?
I don't know what
Phantom, story. The Konami donated a snake's red arm to someone
really?
Else who was like an amputee.
Yeah. Oh, well, he's got one that's Deus Ex, and he goes to conventions dressed as the main character,
Adam Jensen. Nice.
And he's got like the two little studs on the side
Great.
There for his glasses to come out, and he literally has a proper working cybernetic arm.
Has he got the arm blades?
I don't think he's got the arm. I think that he'd had to register himself as a weapon.
Yeah.
I'd be pretty game for having big arm blades and just using it to eat pineapple and cheese.
Yeah.
Because you could just, you know, like a giant toothpick.
Pineapple.
Why not?
Cheese.
Classic step forward for technology. And Scott Telford has taken us back to the 1980s.
I want to eat pineapple from a distance. All right,
toothpick,
I don't want to eat it
elbows.
Here.
Right, you
Go
actually
on.
No. Try and feed yourself with your elbow.
I don't need to. If it's on an arm spike, and put it down.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Yeah. Don't give me that. Trans future. So
Cyberpunk.
Yes. Exactly. This is the power of cyberpunk. The next thing I've got down is the carryover from The Witcher 3. The dude mentioned that the leveling system that was in The Witcher 3 is the same one that's in Cyberpunk, which
well,
is to
from
say,
the same universe. That's why.
Well, they might be based on the series.
No, they are.
Siri.
But like this thing, if you don't know, it's the same as most RPGs, and the Assassin's Creed games have this too, where if you go to the wrong district and something is 5, 10, whatever levels above you, one hit from that thing will just kill you because
Makes
you
sense.
Just don't have the right numerics
for
it. Where are you guys on that style
I like
of
it.
RPG?
I also like the kind of, oh God, I know I talk about it all the time, the Dark Souls, where it's an action RPG,
have
right?
You heard of this, mate?
And it's really difficult.
Shuffle, from
and
what?
If you go the
from hardware, is it? What?
If you go the wrong way,
right?
You don't just get one shot. You kind of have to like gradually figure out you've gone the wrong way. I love that side of things.
Well, see, I like games like that. Where
but
it's, oh, go on.
Sometimes I do like it just to be simple.
Right.
So.
Yeah. See, I appreciate both. For me, I prefer, like, because in The Witcher, if you go up against it, you'll come across some random sub-boss. Like, I remember I once had this massive 40-minute duel with a level 40 witch that I could only take, like, 2 points off every stab. But if I dodged everything, I could eventually get her down to enough health. And I thought, if I eventually beat her, I'll get enough XP. I got her right down to a sliver of health, and she just like threw like some like spit at me, and it killed me in one hit. And I went, I'm never doing this again.
Yeah.
See, no, but, I actually think I'm on your.
Well, I was going to say, if you have an open world or you know a semi-open world or whatever with enemies like in Souls, where it's like you have your set of abilities, you just need to learn how to use them.
Yeah.
Statistics play a part.
Good.
But yeah, get good. But if you're good enough at like Sekiro, it's like if you're good enough at dodging and sort of learning and applying yourself, like in Breath of the Wild, when you first come across like, is it a Lycos or the dude that's on the?
Oh yeah.
The big lion lad.
Well, if you're good enough, you can just finish Breath of the Wild straight away off the gate if you know what you're doing.
Yes, well that's the thing, and I like you know you have a set bunch of abilities and it's just apply them to different scenarios. What do you call that lion?
Oh,
thing?
What are they called?
It's like a Lythos or something. Anyway, there's some big lion lads and they're very hard to fight. But if you get one of them early, it'll destroy you until you get used to.
Linos.
Seven people are yelling at the screen. But if you're very good at dodging, you can eventually take one of those down.
Yes.
You can do it right at the beginning if you get good at it.
I think that in this case, I think that it actually plays. Into Cyberpunk's strength to have people who are literally levels higher than you, because I feel like that again plays into the cybernetic aspect of it. It's like you're scanning them, their power level is over 9,000, you know, whatever. Like.
Plus, is that a way for any developer to try and make an open world into a level where it's like, we want you to go here and then along to here and then back down again? You're not supposed to go all the way to the east yet. You're supposed to go through these districts first.
Well, that's kind of what Fallout does.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Fallout, the
Breath of the Wild kind of does that too.
The further you go towards the coast, the higher the level of resistance you'll find going that way.
But you can go like anyway, like apart from south, you can go like east and west, but like just not to the coast.
But
kind of
if you follow the main path of the storyline, it takes you around those areas, but through specifically weakened state bits. So potentially, it's a good way of leading.
I think it's obviously very effective.
I do like that if there's a main storyline and it takes you there like organically.
I go back and forward on it because I like acquiring a good skill set. One of the things I loved about Sekiro is that you have specific moves you're waiting to acquire, like the Makiri counter against the spear guy, and it's like you can go there, but it'll be way harder. But if you wait, you get a skill that lets you go through that area better with a specific skill that you didn't have before. Because the new Assassin's Creed games have that too. But I don't know what you guys think in terms of does that stat system, once you recognize it, does it put you off?
It sort of inhibits things that I really enjoy in gaming, and that is like speedrunning and challenge runs and stuff like that. But other than that, I can't really think of a bad thing.
Maybe it gives you it makes you very aware of the end game. Maybe because you
it
know
makes me
that
see the strings like a puppet show. It makes me see what they're doing
maybe
more than I want to.
If you know that you've got a level cap of like 99 and your skill levels have 99 level skill caps, maybe you start looking at things and just going like, okay, well, I see that I'm getting strong, so therefore I must be at the end of the game. Whereas the I feel like organically, if you're just kind of like, I'm not leveling up in that sense, but I'm gaining new skills, not new stats.
Well, I like the challenge of like, oh, well, I have these five core skills and I want to throw myself at this impossible boss that like seems to be really threatening and do all these different animations. Oh, but if I use this combination of my skills, I can beat it.
I like that. What really matters is that they make any customization applicable to any bosses that they fight, because we all remember what happened with Deus Ex Human Revolution. They got another company to make those boss battles, and when they came back, you couldn't use stuff like stealth and speech. They actually had to patch it back in for like the director's cut or whatever.
There was,
it was.
A mention in this as well about that idea of like, because they I think it was either Martin Iwinski or someone else from CDPR said that you can't finish the whole game without killing anyone if you want to.
That is brilliant.
Well, so yeah, true. But they the dude that was writing this piece up was saying that the reality of applying that to an open world means that he was saying that like you don't end up with so many like dense environments Deus Ex style where you approach a level and you can see like four potential ways to get in. It's like, oh well, if I had the jumping boots I'd be up there or whatever. He said it was more linear, where it's like, he was just saying that it feels more like it's more corridor based.
Yeah, but I prefer good level design over crappy like if we are going up to a fort, the fort is the thing that I'm excited about going, not how we get to the fort, because that's going to be the condensed packed level design thing that's meant to take me from start to finish of that dungeon, as it were. And that's the enjoyable experience. I don't want to have the same town become the same shootout location for every battle in that area, because that would be boring.
I don't know how, like, considering some of the stuff that they've shown where it's like drug deals gone wrong, or like you're trying to, you know, like exfiltrate someplace after everything's gone, like all the explosions and gunfire and whatever. I don't know how you're going to reframe the context of those places. Like, how do you enter the level differently? Like, they tried to hint at that in the live action trailer, but
surely there's only ever going to be like two or three ways.
We assume so.
The interaction can go down.
Maybe.
Although, like, what if a lot of it is like emergent gameplay?
They have such a massively customizable protagonist. One of the best things about the textbook game, I mean, it's a tabletop RPG thing, is that it is so customizable. Yeah. I think that's, when you were saying before, what do I want from Cyberpunk? Mm-hmm. It is that element of just being completely open-ended, and my version of V being completely different to both of you guys. Mm. And then we go, oh, well, I've done that mission where you rescue such and such. How did you do it? Oh, I did it this way. I didn't even see that.
Well, they did put a massive stress on being able to do things in like multiple different ways. Yeah. So I do think that is something they are prioritizing. Mm. I really like the idea of trying to go through it without killing anyone, especially if it is harder.
I've just suddenly thought of a big problem with that, because if you're designing an action RPG and the person is saying that you can complete it without killing anyone,
why would you want to?
Does that mean then that there's going to be no action set pieces that require you to kill people? Because say you're in a car chase and they've like pulled to
the side. Already shown car chases and boss battles,
so the car's like skidded up and these guys pull their guns out and do that. What do you do?
Well, that's the thing.
Oh, are they saying that you're going to have a partner with you that's going to be able to kill them for you? You're just going to have to hide. You have to run away. Like, I mean,
you do have a partner with you. I mean, Keanu's in your mind, but like, you do work with that other dude.
He's always in
mine too.
He's always in my mind, yeah. But most of the time you do seem to be working with someone. But also, assumedly, depending on how they've layered the narrative in the story, you would have done something in the past that would have triggered those people wanting to kill you in the first place.
But that's interesting, because now you're ending up with a scenario where if I have to wait for my player.
I don't think it's going to be like that.
My AI to kill the people because I'm choosing to play the run as a pacifist, then that's not fun. What you want to do is you want to give the like speech, you want to coerce people, you want to say like, kill this guy for me, and then take a cut.
The phrase was, can you finish the game without killing anybody? Yes, you can just stun them and knock them out.
He might also be talking about that there's multiple endings for the game, and he might just be like, you can complete the game, you go up to
I'm
there,
pretty
and
sure,
somebody
though.
Goes, oh, do you want to take this key? Nah, thanks. End.
I immediately thought that it was going to be like Paragon Renegade, like that kind of difference. Mm. But like, I don't think it is going to be. Like, I don't know.
It seems like there's way more nuance than just the two sides. But like actually being like having to think all that through across like a 60 plus hour RPG.
You know what? I've just thought of how they're going to get around it.
Go on.
They're just going to do the Batman thing. Just use hand to hand combat, and they've knocked out.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You can't. Yeah, I mean, one of the upgrades for the arm spikes is like an electric thing. You want to murder the whole city?
No, I don't. No, I don't. I want to do either or. I want to go from like complete pacifist to the other place. I'm asking too much.
Hey, Macarena. There's the choice. It all boils down to having the choice.
Yeah. So I mean, it'll be very interesting to see, just considering when we all start playing Cyberpunk, how much our paths diverge. Because there is obviously like a specific story, but it makes you wonder how much those specific story missions then diverge. Like, yeah, if you end up with some gang that you've annoyed coming back to get you three missions in that we don't see or something, like that's the kind of stuff I hope that they've done like the most of.
I mean, what we should do is when we get the game, we should do the sort of like hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil thing, where it's like you play as the good guy, I'll play as 100% bad guy, and you play as your sort of mix, and we won't flavor.
I'm going to play as me, which is a mix of both. Anyway.
It is very much
we
a mix.
Do that.
And then that way we can come back and sit down and be like, so what did we all experience?
That'd look forward to the follow up podcast in April.
I was
going to
say, in like almost 1 year's time. Yeah. But we'll have way more data. So yeah, so for now, this is our general sort of thoughts on Cyberpunk 2077. And this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Rachel Shackleton.
Thanks for listening.
And Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'll catch you next time.
Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.